Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 3 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 17th of January 2025. Graham, your presenter, joined for this week by newsreader Desney. And in the news this week, Case of Lifeboat does out with the old, in with the new. A popular restaurant has the unwanted pitter-patter of tiny feet. And our local arts festival takes a break. All this coming your way during the next hour or so, but first, we've got a birthday. Yes, this week we send best wishes to Anthony Wilkin, celebrating this coming Saturday. Have a great day, Anthony. Having been a bit light on news last week, this week we've a full house, so without further ado, over to Desney.
Hello everybody, this is Desney, your newsreader for the week. It's lovely to be back with you again. It seems a long time since I read the news. I hope it's not too late to wish you all a very happy new year, even though we're, well, getting into the second half of January already. Let's start with some news. One of the busiest taxi ranks in Norfolk is to shut in a move that has caused anger among drivers and councillors who say it has been forced upon the town. Great Yarmouth Borough Council's GYBC licensing committee approved the changes for the rank outside the Troll Cart Wetherspoon pub, which will be closed between the hours of 5 a.m. and 11 p.m. The changes are necessary for Norfolk County Council to complete a major £2 million transformation of Yarmouth's road system, which aims to improve bus services. This is to allow for a new bus lane to be created on Temple Road, which will run in the opposite direction from the current flow of traffic. However, taxi drivers and councillors have complained that it has been forced upon the town without proper consultation by County Hall. At a heated licensing committee meeting this week, drivers affected by the changes highlighted their concerns to councillors, with many worrying it will result in a substantial loss of income. But GYBC members said they had no choice but to approve the measures, as if they voted to block it, it would be unlawful, as the traffic regulation order has already been made by NCC. Following the meeting, Kerry Robinson Payne, a Labour councillor for Nelson Ward, said, "We are here to represent the public that elected us. Nobody wants it moved, but if we did not approve this, it would have gone to a judicial review, which would have cost the council thousands of pounds. We were really against it, as we feel walked over by Norfolk County Council, who just expected us to approve it." Officers also said that the decision had been forced upon us. Sean Morley, a spokesman for the Great Yarmouth Taxi Association, said NCC only consulted with a dozen people from the industry, but did not speak to the 400 drivers operating in the town. "We were not properly consulted. This was a prime rank in the middle of the town. We have been totally disregarded as part of the transport network. This has caused lots of hassle and animosity." Mr. Morley says the changes come amid wider frustration at the handling of the taxi network in Yarmouth, and that the changes are already causing problems for drivers. He added, "I think the changes are a waste of money, which will make only small improvements for buses. Drivers have said teething problems have caused chaos and that there is not adequate signage to direct the public to other taxi ranks from the troll cart. The changes were approved by the licensing committee despite the backlash. NCC has refuted complaints there was not enough consultation conducted. A spokesman said, "We carried out a full public consultation on a draft design for the scheme last summer, and the final proposals were designed in consultation with local drivers. All decisions regarding taxi provision in the town rest with Great Yarmouth Borough Council's licensing committee. The completed scheme will improve public transport across Great Yarmouth, making all bus journeys quicker and more reliable and support the local economy." Following the closure of the troll cart rank, the taxi rank outside Theatre Plain will be expanded to allow for 12 cars in total. New taxi ranks will also be built at the Market Gates Road on both north and south sides. A man who was arrested after breaking bad-like scenes in Great Yarmouth has been released on bail. Police were called to Albany House in Wellesley Road, a former care home that is now 18 privately rented flats, at 8:25 a.m. on Monday. Officers found a man with lacerations to his head and arrested another man on suspicion of GBH. A man in his 30s was taken to the Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning and has been released on bail until March the 9th. The victim was taken to James Paget Hospital with serious injuries. Neighbours at Albany House said they thought he was dead upon seeing a man in his 40s with his face covered in blood. One of the neighbours, who wanted to remain anonymous, added, "It was terrifying. Police were pointing guns at the property. I wanted to take a picture to look to see what was going on, but instead I hid behind the curtain. From what I did see, it was like something out of Breaking Bad. And first thing in the morning, it was very scary." Great Yarmouth families can get half-price tickets to Sea Life Centres for a limited time only. Locals with NR or IP postcodes can save 50% on tickets for up to 5 people. The sale, which runs until February the 14th, offers a chance to meet and interact with Humboldt penguins, step into a research submarine to encounter native rays and see African dwarf crocodiles Natombi and Mazozi. People can pre-book their half-price tickets for visits up until April the 6th. This offer provides an opportunity for families to enjoy a day out for less, with the chance to see more than 5,000 sea creatures. To take advantage of the deal, residents can visit www.visitsealife.com/UK/residents-sale/ for more information and to book tickets online. The Sea Life Centre in Great Yarmouth is home to a range of marine life, offering an educational and entertaining experience for all ages. With spring approaching, this offer provides a perfect opportunity for a fun-filled family day out. A new £17 million facility that is set to help reduce surgical waiting times for patients has been officially opened at the James Paget Hospital. The James Paget Orthopaedic Centre, JPOC, and Alton Suite, a new centre for orthopaedic operations and diagnostic tests, has been unveiled at the hospital, which serves both Great Yarmouth and the East Suffolk area. Offering the latest orthopaedic surgical facilities for patients on the East Coast, it is set to see more than 1,000 operations carried out every year in a dedicated, effective orthopaedic facility. The new £17 million centre will provide patients with brand new facilities to help them access the care they need more quickly. Opening its doors to the public at the James Paget University Hospital in Galston on Monday, January the 13th, it was officially opened the previous Friday by Stella Vigg, NHS England's Medical Director for Secondary Care and Quality and National Clinical Director for Elective Care. The JPOC on the ground floor of the new building will operate 7 days a week, helping to bring waiting times down so that patients get the treatment they need more quickly. It will provide around 1,400 theatre sessions per year, meaning more than 3,000 patients can be operated on, which is more than the hospital's current orthopaedic elective capacity. The project to deliver the JPOC has been running for more than 18 months, with the first modules for the new £17 million orthopaedic hub arriving in March 2024. Now the centre features two brand new theatres for elective surgery, 8 treatment rooms, 6 clinical consultation rooms and a waiting area, as well as staff rooms and offices. And with the new theatres freeing up 2 other theatres in the main hospital block, these can now be modernised and refurbished. The centre, situated on land at the northern end of the site, is linked to the £15 million concept ward, which opened in the summer of 2023. A JPUH spokesman said, "Together, they provide us with a dedicated orthopaedic facility for the first time. This will enable surgery to continue even at times of peak demand, especially in the winter, when elective procedures can be postponed due to more beds being needed by patients requiring emergency care." Meanwhile, upstairs at the new facility, a new community diagnostic centre, the Alton Suite, will provide more than 500 additional diagnostic tests per week for patients, specialising in tests to help diagnose heart and lung conditions. It complements the work of the neighbouring Community Diagnostic Centre, which opened last summer. The JPUH spokesman added, "Together, these new facilities mean that patients will be offered tests more quickly, resulting in swifter diagnoses, which are so important for treating many conditions. These are the first buildings on our new healthcare campus, which ultimately will include a brand new hospital for our community." Caister lifeboat crew has waved goodbye to its boat after a wonderful 20 years of service. The independent Caister lifeboat crew bought the Bernard Matthews 2 for £400,000 in 2005. And in that time, it has saved more than 70 lives in over 100 launches. The boat also helped crew members save a dog, a squirrel, and even 2 of their own team after they had fallen overboard. People came out in their droves and lined the sandy shores on Caister Beach to wave farewell to the vessel before it set off on its 3-hour jaunt across the North Sea to the Netherlands, where it will meet its new owner, a boat collector who has paid for it. The lifeboat crew described the departure of the Bernard Matthews 2 as bittersweet because they welcomed their new £3.5 million all-weather lifeboat as its replacement. In total, they have invested £18 million on a new boat, which is still to be named, as well as a launch carriage, launch tractor and alterations to the lifeboat station and slipway, all funded by donations and legacies. Paul Garrod, chairman and crewman for Caister Lifeboat of 35 years, said, "It is a sad day, but a hugely exciting day because after 20 years of service, we welcome the new lifeboat. So it is a bittersweet feeling. Overall, it is a very proud day for the village, Great Yarmouth and for Norfolk. There were many great rescues on the Bernard Matthews too. Many people are walking about today who wouldn't be without that great boat. And we have already completed one rescue in the new boat while on a training exercise, a sign of things to come. Guy Gibson, coxswain and director, added, "It is the end of an era. There's a bit of sadness, but we are really pleased to get the new boat. In the last boat, we were able to make a huge difference in saving lots of lives, and we hope to continue making a difference in the new one." The new boat is still yet to be named, but former coxswain at Caister Lifeboat for 14 years, Richard Thurlow, would like it to be named after his late wife, Annette. He said, "We launched a huge fundraising effort to get money together to buy this. Myself and others went to Cornwall 2 or 3 times and all around the country. I think it would be special if it could have been named after my wife, but we will see." Vicky Matthews, the daughter of turkey factory owner Bernard Matthews, who the last boat is named after, said she wished her father was alive to see the new boat. "It is a sad day to see the old boat go off, because Dad was so heavily involved here at Caister, and it feels a bit like saying goodbye to him all over," she said. "But the new boat is fantastic, and Dad would have loved to have seen the replacement, because it is a real state-of-the-art boat." A family has claimed that they are being kicked off a caravan park after their mother failed to pay the rent due to dementia. Margaret Jarvis, 89, rents a pitch at Long Beach Caravan Park in Hemsby, but still owes last year's fees of £4,200. Her son-in-law, Aidan Hinders, said this was because over the last 12 months, she has developed dementia and has been in and out of hospital. He also said that some of the family's belongings, including furniture and decorations, have been taken from the caravan and put in a barn following a warning from the park's owners about the outstanding charges. Mr. Hindles, who lives in Shrewsbury with his partner, Jamie Jarvis, said, "We only learned of the issue in early December, after Margaret blurted out that her son Jamie is going to lose the caravan. She'd been sent several letters from the caravan park owner, but had thrown them in the bin. The family owes £4,200 for the year. Mr. Hinders said they have offered to pay £2,000 in cash up front, and then the rest in instalments of £800 a month until August this year. He said their offer had been refused." Andrew Grote, who owns the caravan park, said, "It is a private matter concerning one customer and their situation, and we don't have any comments to make on it." The Jarvis family has had a caravan at Long Beach for the last 60 years. Mr. Hinders said, "They have paid many tens of thousand pounds in fees over the years, having not even been late with site fees until 2024. This terrible saga with our beautiful holiday home has really got us down," he added. Long Beach Caravans is currently rated 4.5 on Google, with reviews written by more than 500 customers.
More news in just a while, but first, details of a visit organised by Vision Norfolk. This is a visit of the Norfolk Heritage Group to the Norwich Castle Museum for the touching Turner Workshop. It's on Tuesday the 11th of February from 10:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. and it's Meet at the Entrance. Mark Smith from Vision Norfolk says, Norwich Castle would like to invite members of Vision Norfolk to a free Touching Turner workshop inspired by their special exhibition JMW Turner and Changing Visions of Landscape. This object handling session will bring to life Turner's painting Walton Bridges, which is at the heart of the exhibition. Learn about the painting's history and discover different interpretations. Then visit the exhibition and explore different artists' approach to landscape from the 17th century until today. This workshop is part of the National Lottery Heritage Fund's Walton Bridges Activity Plan. Please book by Monday the 3rd of February by contacting Mark or Helen on 01603 573000 extension 341 or 342. That's 01603 573000 extension 341 or 342. Or you can email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk. Right, the second part of this week's news is upon us, which will be closely followed by details of the coming week's TV. So it's back to Desney.
Police were called to the home of a man in his 20s moments before he went missing and was never seen alive again, a coroner's court has heard. Pavel Martiniak went missing from his home in Gorston in November 2021 when he was 21 years old. Despite widespread public appeals to trace his whereabouts from the police and his family, he was not seen alive or heard from again. On March the 22nd, 2023, by which time he would have been 23, part of his body was discovered on Winston Beach, leading to an inquest into his death being opened. A full inquest, due to last 3 days, has been scheduled to take place in June to examine the circumstances surrounding his death. But a preliminary hearing, held on Tuesday, was told that moments before his disappearance, the police were called to an incident at his family home. Appeals at the time stated he had last been seen at around 6 p.m. on November the 30th, 2021. The court heard that at 5:50 p.m. police had been called to an incident involving an assault at the family home and that attempts were made to locate and arrest him. Meanwhile, it was heard that the inquest will examine the circumstances surrounding his disappearance and the mental health treatment he had received in the months leading up to it. The 3-day inquest will see staff from the Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust called to give evidence relating to his case, with Mr. Martiniak's family set to raise concerns about communication between the trust and his GP. His mother told the court, "We think mental health services are not listening to family concerns. Had they done so, he could have still been alive now and enjoying his life." The inquest will be held between June the 10th and the 12th. More bin lorries are to be kitted out with monitoring technology to gather further data on Norfolk's mobile phone hotspots, or not spots. Norfolk County Council's StreetWave project has seen devices installed on 14 refuse vehicles to gather data on signal strength and download speed to create maps of coverage quality. And the County Council has been so impressed by the results of the scheme, run in partnership with mobile analysts, that it has extended the scheme for a further year. The council intends to install devices on more bin lorries at about £3,000 per vehicle to build up an even better picture of coverage. Council officials said the data collected is crucial because it allows the council to present evidence to mobile phone operators to encourage them to invest to improve coverage. Councillors agreed to the extension at a recent meeting of the council's Corporate Select Committee. Jeff Connell, Director of Digital Services at Norfolk County Council, said good progress was being made in providing superfast broadband and ultrafast broadband through Project Gigabit. He said mobile phone coverage was more challenging because it was driven by private companies governed by regulator Ofcom. Mr. Connell said Ofcom's analysis of whether coverage was acceptable was based on data provided by phone companies, which he likened to operators marking their own homework. He said the StreetWave project enabled the council to present data which was more reflective of the true picture of coverage, which it was sharing with Ofcom and operators to encourage investment. Stuart Clancy, Conservative County Councillor for the Taverham, said, "Ever since I've been a councillor, we've been talking about not spots in Norfolk, and the reality is that they are still there." Ben Price, Green County Councillor for Thorpe Hamlet, said, "It's great to see the StreetWave project rolled out." A former hair salon could be turned into housing. Roy Munnings of J.W. Munnings Properties Limited is seeking permission from Great Yarmouth Borough Council to change the use of a property in Bradwell. The unit is a former hairdresser's, which operated on the first floor of 42 Homefield Avenue. Mr. Munnings wants to convert the salon, which was called Head to Head, into a two-bedroom flat. So far, the application has received no objections. An arts festival has been cancelled this year, with organisers blaming low turnout. Great Yarmouth Arts Festival normally takes place every September and has been an annual event since 2012, but this year it will not take place. The organisers said the decision was not taken lightly, but they believed it was essential to ensure the long-term success and sustainability of the festival. Hugh Sturzacker, chairman, said the attendance last year was very much down on previous years. He highlighted music events where turnout was extremely poor and said the festival committee needed to improve their publicity. Another factor in the cancellation is the difficulty in finding volunteers. Mr. Sturzacker said people seem to prefer to sit at home watching TV rather than going out. People got used to staying at home during COVID, but unless people get off their backsides, the arts and culture are going to suffer. "We're disappointed. We've been going for over a dozen years, but if people aren't going to support it and we can't get more volunteers, it's going to be very difficult to run," Mr. Sturzacker added. This year, the committee will try to gain charity status while also attempting to redevelop the festival programme, recruit volunteers and improve marketing of the events. They said they are confident these efforts will lead to a more vibrant and robust arts festival in 2026. The festival normally takes place in September at venues across the borough, including the Minster, on the seafront and in St George's Park, among other locations, with concerts, talks and exhibitions. The week-long celebration then culminates in a carnival parade through the town. Last year's festival provided a range of musical events, concluding with the East Coast Sinfonietta, who played George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow, Beethoven's Violin Concerto, and Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony. Ormiston Cliff Park Primary Academy has opened a new nursery in Ord Avenue, Galston, which aims to inspire a love for learning in children aged 3 and 4. The space boasts new classrooms designed to create a bespoke learning environment as well as new learning facilities. The nursery will also provide flexibility for local parents, with pupils being able to attend for both whole days or morning and afternoon separate sessions. Louise Watkins, principal at Ormiston Cliff Park Primary Academy, said, "We are thrilled to be extending our support to the youngest members of our community and furthering our mission to provide every child with the very best start in life. This nursery is a wonderful opportunity to create an inspiring learning environment where children can develop a strong foundation for future success. It also strengthens our vision to provide high-quality education that benefits not just pupils, but also their families." There's something we hear a lot about these days: scammers. Scammers are pretending to be police officers to steal people's bank details. Norfolk Constabulary has issued a warning after spotting an influx of reports of the crime. On Monday alone, 6 people across Great Yarmouth, North Norfolk and Downham Market reported receiving a call from somebody claiming to be a local police officer. In each instance, the fraudster gave a fake name and collar number to try to earn the victim's trust. Each caller was told their bank card had been used fraudulently and was asked to provide their banking details. A spokesman for the force said, "Remember, the police will never ask you to withdraw or send money or purchase items. If you have doubts about the person who called you, hang up and wait 5 minutes before calling 101. There have been cases of fraudsters keeping the line open after a victim has hung up, so leaving several minutes between calls will make sure that the call has closed. A man has been sentenced to 24 weeks in prison following a string of thefts in Galston. Anthony Warne, aged 29 and of no fixed address, pleaded guilty to 4 counts of theft from a shop, burglary and possession of a bladed article in a public place. Warne stole items including laundry products, coffee and alcohol from 2 shops in Magdalen Way on 4 separate occasions between October the 5th and December the 29th last year. On another occasion, on January the 10th, at a co-op in Magdalen Way, Warne was captured on CCTV smashing a window and committing a burglary in which 6 bottles of alcohol were stolen. He also admitted to 13 other offences put to him by Operation Converter, which were taken into consideration by the court. These offences included 11 thefts from shops, a common assault, and making off without payment. He appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on Monday and was handed a 24-week prison sentence and ordered to pay £1,841.65 in compensation. The date from which all Norfolk tips will be shut on Wednesdays has been announced. Norfolk County Council officials have confirmed that the County Hall Run recycling centres will close in the middle of the week from June the 1st this year. The Cabinet at the Council agreed last year that it would cut the opening hours at the recycling centres to save £200,000. The council runs 19 recycling centres across the county. 13 are currently open 7 days a week, but will shut on Wednesdays from the summer. The 6 other centres already operate on a part-time basis and are only open from Friday to Mondays. Staff at the recycling centres are employed by Norse Environmental Waste Services, NEWS, which started a staff consultation in September 2024 to propose new shift patterns. Council officers said that possible redundancies have been kept to a minimum by the managing vacancies across the service using agency staff. However, they say all shift patterns at recycling centres currently open 7 days a week will be required to change to accommodate a day off on a Wednesday. When the decision was taken, James Bensley, the council's cabinet member for environment and waste, said the closures would bring Norfolk in line with Suffolk and make the service more sustainable. He said visitor numbers show Wednesday remains one of the quietest days of the week. The Wednesday closures, along with a controversial new timed slot booking system at tips, are cost-cutting measures by the council. They were part of £44 million worth of cuts and savings agreed last year, with councillors facing the need to plug a similar gap this year. The authority has also changed the way it charges for trade waste, in a move which some small traders warned would mean costs would be passed on to customers. Opposition leaders have expressed fears that the changes will lead to an increase in fly tipping. A stone's throw from Great Yarmouth seafront, it is a building that was once used for improving the moral and religious condition of sailors. And while it is a long time since St John's Church at the corner of York Road and Lancaster Road was used for that purpose, there are now hopes that the Grade 2 listed building could help improve the lives of young people in the borough. Work will soon begin on restoring the church, with the project also providing opportunities for learning traditional skills and trades like stonemasonry and carpentry. The building is owned by Great Yarmouth Preservation Trust, GYPT, which bought it from the Church of England in 2016 for the symbolic sum of £1. Recently, the Trust secured £495,000 from the Town Deal Fund to help bring the building back to life, with plans to turn the church, which was deconsecrated in 1971, into a community hub. Darren Barker, GYPT Managing Director, said the whole building is in need of lots of repair. We will use the project as a vehicle for training, prioritising people who are not employed or in education. It's sad that lots of these skills are dying out, but the project will provide an opportunity for young people to learn traditional skills, including masonry and carpentry. Work will start in spring and last about a year. Initial repairs to the roof and stonework have already been carried out, with contributions from Estonian students participating in a conservation programme led by the Trust. The work will be overseen by Master Stonemason John Briggs and his son Steve. John, who has been a stonemason since the 1970s, said the best thing about the trade was when the scaffolding comes down and you see what you've done. The Trust invites anyone interested in gaining hands-on experience in the restoration project to get in touch. St John's Church was built in 1857 when the area was little more than sand dunes. Originally a modest structure, it served as the headquarters for the Beach and Harbour Mission, an organisation committed to improving the moral and religious condition of beach men and sailors, as well as their families. Over the years, the church has expanded and become adorned with elaborate features. It's a long time since we've talked about what we can see on our televisions or hear on our radios. I wonder what you've been watching and listening to lately. A lot of the old programmes have come back, the programmes that come round every year, or the programmes that have perhaps just come back for a second year. There's Dancing on Ice, that's been going a long time, that's back on. There's The Traitors, perhaps you're in the middle of learning all about the people on The Traitors. I wonder how difficult that really is when you're there, to keep trying to find out who you should vote off, and then being so sorry that you voted for the wrong person. Oh, it's a terrible game. Anton Deck's Limitless Win is back. You could win an absolute fortune as long as you know some of the most ridiculous things. How tall is a tin of baked beans? How long is a toilet roll? Goodness me. But Anton Deck are always worth watching. If you love them, you'll love the programme. If you don't, well, watch something else. Gladiators is back. Now, that was a programme from long ago on ITV, wasn't it? In the early 90s, I think that was. Late 80s, I believe it started. Now, it's back on ITV. And the Gladiators, well, some of the Gladiators we've seen in other programmes recently. Montel Douglas, she's Fire in Gladiators. She was dancing with Johannes Rabedi in Strictly before Christmas, wasn't she? And at Christmas, Harry Akinzeriti, who plays Nitro, is he called Nitro as a gladiator? He was in Celebrity. Christmas Celebrity Strictly Come Dancing, wasn't he? I don't know that I can remember the names of any of the other gladiators. Just those two, who were both well-known athletes in their time. Another one that's about to come back is the Michael McIntyre Big Show. Perhaps that's the programme you like. If you like Michael McIntyre as a comic, you'll enjoy it. But he has some good guests on there, some interesting guests. He does some terrible things. He sends out messages on some celebrity's mobile and has a lot of fun reading the replies. Then there's The Weakest Link. That's been on for a good few weeks. They're all celebrities. Do you remember when Anne Robinson used to do it? And they were just ordinary people, just like you and me. Now, it's all celebrities. They don't do as well as those ordinary people used to do, I don't think, on the whole. There's some new pointless celebrities. I've seen some that have been on it time and time again, but there have been some new ones over Easter with new celebrities. I must run out of celebrities sometime and find out there's nobody that famous left. Casualty. That's another Saturday night programme. I think all those ones. Gladiators, Michael McIntyre, Weakest Link, Pointless Celebrities and Casualty. Oh, they come one after another on the BBC. They'll fill your Saturday night for you. If you want something a little more serious, there is a new series of Pompeii, The New Dig, an archaeological programme where you can find out what the latest finds are in the latest archaeological dig of Pompeii. Another programme that's coming back and is also on BBC Two, the rest of the week, or that I think is on at 9 p.m. on BBC Two, was Pompeii, the archaeological programme. That's on a Monday. And from Tuesday to Friday next week is Winter Watch, where Chris Packham and Michaela Strachan have a look at the how the wildlife in this country is doing, in the nation's wildlife at the most challenging time of the year. And they are based this time at the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds in Arne in Dorset. And Michaela Strachan and Chris Packham and Iolo Williams will all be there to update you. Michaela Strachan is busy doing Dancing on Ice as well. I saw her last Sunday, I think, which was the second programme in the series, but the only one I've seen so far. And she did quite well, I seem to remember. There's a radio programme that I saw heavily advertised in the Radio Times on Saturday morning, for those of you who listen to your radios on a Saturday morning, at 10:30 on Radio 4, 10:30 in the morning, is What's Funny About? And that's the title of a new series of programmes. But the first one is What's Funny About a Bit of Fry and Laurie. Do you remember when Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie used to do that programme, which they called A Bit of Fry and Laurie? That was on, I think, that was 80s to 90s as well. And this goes back to those times, and two comedians are back on discussing their programme and how they started out on this comedy trail of theirs. So that's a radio programme for Saturday morning at 10:30 a.m. on BBC Radio 4. The Traitors is on Wednesday, Thursday and Friday at 9 p.m. on BBC One. And this coming week is going to be the last week of this series. And so Friday's final is going to start earlier. That's at 8:30. It'll go on a bit longer than an hour, but their follow-up programme, Traitors Uncloaked, which goes behind the scenes with the programme and interviews some of the people who have just been voted off or just been murdered by the traitors, will bring it all together nicely after we've found out who wins. Ant and Dec's Limitless Win is on Saturdays and Sundays. Saturday programme this week begins at 8:30. The Sunday programme begins at 8. Gladiators on BBC One on Saturday. That begins at 5:50 and is followed an hour later at 6:50 by Michael McIntyre's Big Show. And that in turn is followed by The Weakest Link, which is followed by Pointless Celebrities, which is followed by Casualty. I think that's all. I think I've told you the times of all. Dancing on Ice on Sunday, ITV, that is also a 9 o'clock programme. If there's anything that you really enjoyed at Christmas that you'd like to tell me about, or there's anything that you're looking forward to, you can always get in touch with us, and Graham tells you how to do that at the end of the issue. So until next time, which won't be very long, I think I'm on again in 2 weeks' time. Goodbye. We'll be right back.
Mark Ayres and the theme from Casualty. Okay, it's time to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
People at risk of falls. More than 12,000 people across Norfolk will be contacted and told that artificial intelligence has identified them as at risk of being hurt in falls. Council officials will be telephoning or writing to these individuals, encouraging them to take action that could stop them ending up in hospital. It is hoped the scheme will reduce pressure on the stretched NHS and adult social care. The initiative is set to be rolled out countywide after successful trials of the technology in parts of Norfolk. Norfolk County Council has used artificial intelligence to analyse people which it and district councils have had contact with to assess whether they are at risk of falling at home. A process called machine learning has been used to develop algorithms for computers to assess thousands of relationships between numerous risks and the likelihood of falling. This can work out which combinations of risks are the best predictors of a fall, and thus the people most at risk. Councils and voluntary groups then send these people letters, call them or visit them to offer advice and suggestions. This might include making adaptations to their homes, such as installing handrails. Those at risk may also be encouraged to take exercise or get involved with their local communities to keep them active and prevent isolation. The council says out of the 700 people who were contacted in the initial trial of the project, 536 people answered the calls and 278 had a conversation with the caller. Of those, 156 people agreed to take up 239 referrals and 71 people had 87 interventions, such as home adaptations. Follow-up calls were made to check their progress. After the initial pilot, a further trial was conducted in South Norfolk, which identified 2,400 people deemed to be at risk of falls. Council bosses are now getting ready to roll the scheme out across the whole of Norfolk. Alison Thomas, Cabinet Minister for Adult Social Care, said, "Proactive intervention is a vital tool in supporting people to live independent, healthy lives in the place they choose to call home. Our pilot has shown that we can identify people most at risk of falling and reduce the chance that this happens. As we look to roll this out across Norfolk, this will have a significant impact for individuals, their families and carers, but also on relieving the significant pressures across both health systems and adult social care." It comes as the government set out its plans to improve the UK's use of artificial intelligence. Ministers have accepted all recommendations of a plan written by tech entrepreneur Matt Clifford aimed at improving the UK's use of artificial intelligence technology. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer said, "AI isn't something locked away behind the walls of blue chip companies. It's a force for change that will transform the lives of working people for the better." That's the irony of AI. It will make public services more human, reconnect staff with the reasons that they came to public service in the first place. A force that will turbocharge every single element of our plan for change, the defining opportunity of our generation. He said the UK needed to decide if it would be an AI maker or AI taker, and predicted Britain would become one of the great AI superpowers. Next phase of Bradwell 700 home scheme. The next phase of a huge housing development that will see 700 homes built in Bradwell is facing its next hurdle. Great Yarmouth Borough councillors will meet next week to discuss the design and layout of the sixth portion of the scheme for 93 houses on land at Wheatcroft Farm. Outline permission for the Persimmon Homes project has already been approved in 2014, but this application will focus on the finer details, such as the type of materials used to build the properties and the roads and open spaces. There have been few objections, but Norfolk County Council's Public Rights of Way officer has raised concerns that the Belton Bridleway could be affected by the development and has urged Persimmon Homes to ensure public access is not restricted. Villagers have also worried about the cumulative impact of traffic at Beccles Road and that local services such as GPs, dentists and hospitals could struggle to meet the increased demand. GYBC planning officers have recommended the scheme be approved and councillors will meet on January the 22nd to vote on the application. A driver is still receiving medical treatment 3 months after a dramatic crash that left him seriously injured and cars scattered across the street. Norfolk Police said they are still investigating the incident that occurred just after 11 p.m. on October the 14th last year when a green Mini Countryman collided with a parked car on Barnard Avenue in Great Yarmouth. The impact pushed the first car into four others, flipping it onto the path and leaving a trail of destruction. According to an eyewitness, the driver of the Mini, a man in his 40s, was lying on the road injured but conscious. A spokesperson for Norfolk Police said on Wednesday, January the 14th, that the man is still receiving medical treatment. None of the other vehicles were occupied at the time of the crash. Photos from the aftermath showed one car overturned on the pavement, another with its front end destroyed, and emergency crews working under streetlights to clear the wreckage. Norfolk Police are appealing for information. They would like to speak with witnesses or anyone with dash cam footage to come forward as they investigate the crash. Those who can help should call 101. A driver who was arrested at the scene of a crash after a car flattened a set of traffic lights and ploughed into a home will face no further action, police have said. Officers were called to the incident in Yarmouth Way in Great Yarmouth on November the 19th, 2024, after a car knocked over a set of traffic lights before smashing into the front of a house. The driver of the vehicle, a man in his 20s, was arrested at the scene of the crash on suspicion of taking a vehicle without consent and drink driving. He was bailed until January the 15th, and now Norfolk Police has said there will be no further action against the man arrested and the case has been closed. Witnesses said at the time that they heard a screech as the car accelerated down the road, followed by a loud bang as the motorist slammed into the lamppost and wall. Litter pickers in Great Yarmouth have complained they regularly find mattresses and furniture dumped in the town centre. Members of the town's civic society make the rounds of the town every week, helping to clear away trash. And while they say that overall the town centre is looking tidier, fly tipping is still a problem. Hugh Sturzacker, chairman of the Civic Society, said, "Generally the worst problems are cigarette butts and bird droppings, but nearly every week we find mattresses and furniture left in one of the rows. Surely some of the people leaving these items could be spotted on CCTV and should be fined," he added. Another problem is weeds, which the Civic Society have been spraying throughout the year. Mr. Sturzacker said, "We really ought to have a campaign to set up a neighbourhood watch scheme which would help improve the appearance of streets as well as developing community and civic pride. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has been discussing tougher action on people littering, fly tipping or graffitiing, with fines set to more than quadruple for some offences. Litterbugs could be fined £250 on the spot, a 200% increase from the previous charge, while fly tippers face a £1,000 fine, four times more than costs set currently. The council's environment rangers investigate reports of fly tipping, and offenders face an unlimited fine and or a jail sentence under the Environmental Protection Act. Fly tipping in the borough can be reported via the Love Clean Streets app or website, via email at environmentalrangers@great-yarmouth.gov.uk or by calling 01493 846 478. The Civic Society does litter picking every Tuesday morning, usually starting on the plaza outside St George's Theatre at 10 a.m. Great Yarmouth Heritage Guides have unveiled a new series of history talks. The one-hour sessions held at the Town Hall will take place at 1 p.m. on the second Tuesday of February, March, October, November and December. Each session costs £5.50 and includes a hot drink and a question and answer session. The February the 11th session, Year Beat, The Greatest Hits, will take attendees through the town's rock and pop history. March's talk, Great Women from Great Yarmouth, will celebrate the borough's inspirational women in honour of International Women's Day. The autumn and winter talks will cover topics including the Victorian circus, amphibious tanks and local ghost stories. Ruth Cockrell, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Marketing and Events Officer, said these latest series of talks promise to offer a fascinating glimpse into our past, and we're sure those who attend will enjoy these events in the wonderful setting of the historic Town Hall. Booking is essential and closes 48 hours before each event. Visit www.great-yarmouth.gov.uk/heritage-and-arts/walks-and-talks. A shop worker in Great Yarmouth has been arrested after they were found to be working illegally. A Home Office operation was carried out at the Londis store on St Peter's Road on Wednesday, January the 8th. Immigration enforcement officers encountered an individual working illegally who was subsequently arrested. A right to work civil penalty notice was served to the business, while the individual working illegally has been bailed pending their removal from the United Kingdom. The business could face a fine of up to £45,000 for the penalty. A Home Office spokesman said vulnerable individuals can find themselves trapped in unsafe and insecure conditions, facing exploitation and even modern-day slavery. That's why our Border Security Command is relentless in its pursuit of these gangs and will cut off their operations at the earliest opportunities. We are determined to clamp down both on illegal working and the exploitative treatment of illegal workers. There are more than 2,200 Londis shops across the United Kingdom. Each store is entirely independently owned and operated. Norfolk's two newest libraries are set to open later this year, council officials have confirmed. Replacement libraries in Great Yarmouth and King's Lynn will be included in new multi-million pound community hubs which are being built inside former town centre shops. The £17 million scheme in Yarmouth, named The Place, is taking shape in the former Palmer's department store off the marketplace. Its new library will replace the current one in Tollhouse Street. The hub will also be home to adult learning services, the registry office, Norfolk Citizens Advice, and other community support services. There will also be a new university and learning centre through a partnership with East Coast College, the University of Suffolk and the University of East Anglia. At a meeting of Norfolk County Council's Infrastructure and Development Select Committee, Conservative County Councillor Barry Stone asked when the project led by Great Yarmouth Borough Council will be opening. Officers said there are plans for the spring, but it could be late spring now. We do not have a definite date yet. A similar project in King's Lynn involves work to turn the former Argos store in the town's Vancouver quarter into a hub including a community centre, offices and a new library. Officers said that project was due to open in the autumn. A mice infestation has forced a well-rated restaurant to close due to extreme filth. The unannounced food hygiene inspection was carried out at Tono Trabalhoe in Regent Street, Great Yarmouth, by the Great Yarmouth Borough Council on January the 9th. The Portuguese restaurant was found to be infested with mice, causing extreme contamination of filth within the kitchen and bar area. The well-liked spot, which boasts an impressive 4.7-star rating on Google reviews, was forced to close its doors immediately following the discovery. The hygiene emergency prohibition notice, which was placed on the restaurant's window, declared an imminent risk of injury to health due to poor food hygiene. An order was then granted at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on Monday to ensure that the restaurant is unable to reopen until satisfactory health standards are met. Popular dishes at the spot included barbecue chicken garnished with pickled veg and served with rice, and cuts of pork and beef served with chips. Councillor Paul Wells, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's portfolio holder for licensing and waste, environment and sustainability, said, "We have many excellent food businesses that work hard to meet the required standards around food hygiene. However, unfortunately, there are some occasions when some businesses fall short of those standards." A programme described as a lifeline for older people is at risk of closure. Creative Arts East has issued an urgent appeal to local businesses to help secure the future of its Creative Ageing programme in Great Yarmouth. The initiative, which provides monthly creative workshops for older residents facing ill health and loneliness, could be forced to close from May without immediate investment. Since 2022, Creative Arts East has been delivering creative socials at St George's Theatre Cafe in Great Yarmouth. These free workshops offer entertainment and new interests for vulnerable older people, as well as a chance to connect and create. Activities have included Caribbean dancing, printmaking and African drumming. The programme runs in multiple locations across the county, and 87% of participants report improved mental well-being. Despite its success, Creative Arts East is struggling to secure the funding necessary to continue the workshops in Great Yarmouth. Natalie Joad, Executive Director at Creative Arts East, said, "I'm deeply concerned about the prospect of our Great Yarmouth sessions closing. This is one of our most well-attended and valued groups, and its closure would be a significant loss to the community. We have successfully secured investment to maintain creative socials in other areas across the county, thanks to local authority and support, and we hope to be able to do the same for our Great Yarmouth beneficiaries by April 2025. The organisation is now calling on the community to help save the programme. It is asking if local organisations could partner with Creative Arts East to fund a series of sessions and wants people to spread the word about them. It costs £12,000 to deliver a year-long programme of activity offering 300 social interactions for at least 30 vulnerable older people living in Great Yarmouth. To learn more about how you can support the Creative Health Programme, contact Creative Arts East at info@creativeartseast.co.uk or visit www.creativeartseast.co.uk.
Well, that's just about it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreader next week will be Andy, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.